Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Kita Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dwaita Jagadamba Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopina Shankunda Radha Kunda Gini Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Namaji Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Ganga Vai Jumana Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaviti Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Nivaranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Vipulation Mati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Iti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gavarani Pachamani Visesa Sanyani Paskajani Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavas Chashi Rufam Sagraja Thamsa Hagana Ravila Thambikams Thamsa Jina. Sadvaitam Sadvaritam Parichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahana Lalitam Shri Vishakam Vikamstri. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Text 40. Tvam apyabhadra, tvam apyadabhra, sruta vishrutam viva.
Sutta Vishuddha
Indeed, there is no other way to get out of such miseries. So this is Narada speaking to Vyasadeva. This is his...
Just move that out just a little bit.
Okay, like that. So this... Am I better now? This is Narada speaking to Vyasadeva how to solve his problem. Preach the glories of the Lord that you have heard, and this will stop the sufferings of whom? The living entities, two categories he gave. Anybody remember?
The conditioned,
yeah, but he gave sort of two categories of conditioned. Should we read it again? Please, therefore, describe the Almighty Lord's activities, which you have learned by your vast knowledge of the Vedas, for that will satisfy the hankerings of great learned men, and at the same time mitigate the miseries of the masses of common people, who are always suffering from material pangs. Indeed, there is no other way to get out of such miseries.
Great learned men.
Yeah. And common people. So great learned people and common people. And that's the basis for this very extraordinary purport of Srila Prabhupada. So, purport. Sri Narada Muni, from practical experience, definitely asserts that the prime solution of all problems of material work is to broadcast very widely the transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord. So how does Narada Muni know this? What is the means by which Narada Muni knows this? This advice he's giving, he knows it by? By practical experience. Doesn't say Narada Muni knows this just because, you know, he heard it, but he has practical experience. There are four classes of good men, and there are four classes of bad men also. The four classes of good men acknowledge the authority of the Almighty God, and therefore such good men, one, when they are in difficulty, two, when they are in need of money, three, when they are advanced in knowledge, and four, when they are inquisitive to know more and more about God, intuitively take shelter of the Lord. As such, Naradaji advises Vyasadeva to broadcast the transcendental knowledge of God in terms of the vast Vedic knowledge which he has already attained. So again, attained, even though we have the word Shruta and Shrutam as far as heard, we understand that Vyasadeva also has practical experience. He's attained to this knowledge. It's not just that he's heard it. And so the good people, what distinguishes the good people? What do? They take shelter of the Lord. How? What was the adverb? Okay, that's an adverbial phrase or clause when they're in need of, when they have something they want to get. Okay, and how do they take shelter? In what way? Probably have a nice adverb here. Intuitively. In other words, these people take shelter of God naturally, automatically. It's their immediate natural reaction. Exactly what David Mitchell was talking about yesterday. Right? Oh, you got a new dress? Praise the Lord. Right? Oh, I want my son to get a new position? Pray to God for it. You know, it's just an intuitive response that if you want, and what are the four things again that you could want? Dharma is a common motion. And as it's the way that it's described, I wonder if you could connect these with Dharma or Karma, which would be interesting. You want, when you want freedom from suffering, when you want money, and money is used here almost symbolically, when you want material opulence, it doesn't necessarily mean that only applies to money and not to a car. You follow? Okay. So when you're in suffering, when you want some material opulence, it's when they're advanced in knowledge. When you're looking more, you already have transcendental knowledge. This doesn't mean knowledge of Sanskrit or knowledge of the geography of the planet or knowledge of how to fix a carburetor. It means transcendental knowledge. When you're basically Brahman realized, and because of being Brahman realized, therefore you want to have a relationship with the Lord. It's still not exactly love, but it's on a very high platform. And the other is when you want knowledge. When you're wondering what's going on here, who am I, what's the purpose of life. Okay, so those are the four good guys. We have, this is the white hats and the black hats purport. Okay, next paragraph. As far as the bad men are concerned, it's so sweet, the Prabhupada using the good men and the bad men. As far as the bad men are concerned, they are also four in number. One, those who are simply addicted to the mode of progressive fruitive work and are thus subjected to the accompanying miseries. Two, those who are simply addicted to vicious work for sense gratification and so suffer the consequence. Three, those who are materially very much advanced in knowledge, but who suffer because they do not have the sense to acknowledge the authority of the Almighty Lord. And four, the class of men who are known as atheists, and who therefore purposely hate the very name of God, although they are always in difficulty. So let's look at these four people. So the first, they're addicted to what? Fruit of work. So this sounds like people who are in what mode of nature? Passion. Because the next one, he says, those who are addicted to vicious work. So this would be people who are in the mode of ignorance. So we have the people who are in the mode of passion, they just want to enjoy the world as pious people. Then we have people in the mode of ignorance who want to enjoy the world as impious people. Then those who have knowledge, but don't acknowledge this Almighty Lord. This sounds more like people in sattva-guna, but they're not accepting God. So these are going to be your philosophers and your poets and your professors and so forth. People who normally are supposed to be in sattva-guna, but they're using their knowledge badly. And then we just have the general atheist, who really could be in any mode, right? You could be an atheist in any of the modes of nature. So you have the people who just hate God. Sri Naradaji advised Vyasadeva to describe the glories of the Lord just to do good to all eight classes of men, both good and bad. Now I find that to be an astonishing sentence. We normally think of Bhagavatam as being good to the four good guys. But why would Bhagavatam do good to the four bad guys? Hold them out of ignorance. But they don't want to come out of ignorance. They purposely hate the very name of God, so it's pretty astonishing. I'm going to read that again. Sri Naradaji advised Vyasadeva to describe the glories of the Lord just to do good to all eight classes of men, both good and bad. Srimad Bhagavatam is therefore not meant for any particular class of men or sect. It is for, now who is it for? This is the qualification. It is for the sincere soul who actually wants his own welfare and peace of mind. So even if you're a bad guy, if you sincerely want your own welfare and peace of mind, you can get benefit from this Bhagavatam. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam for Vyasadeva. Tvam apyata brahshuta vishutam vibho, samapyate yena vidam vibhushitam, pratyahi dukhair muhir arditatmanam, sankleśa nirvanam shanti nanyata. Please therefore describe the Almighty Lord's activities which you have learned by your vast knowledge of the Vedas, for that will satisfy the hankerings of great learned men, and at the same time mitigate the miseries of the masses of common people who are always suffering from material pains. Indeed, there is no other way to get out of such miseries. So this is for people who want to be happy, who want their own welfare and peace of mind. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you cannot have happiness without peace. So inner peace and your own happiness. Now we might say, well, doesn't everybody want that? What do you say? Does everybody want peace, a peaceful mind and their own happiness? We can say in general, Ananda Maya Vyasat, everybody's looking for happiness and everybody's looking for peace. Psychologists will identify those as two universal needs, the need for peace and the need for happiness. But we can ask the question, does everybody really want those things? This is a very interesting question. And we might also ask the question, do I really want those things? Like Prabhupada will say that if you want to leave things as they are, if you don't want to get purified, then that's another story. Because everything's seated on desire. We have that old painting in the Bhagavad Gita of the upside down banyan tree, where Dvamulam, the root is up. And you remember that old painting? So the banyan tree is reflected in the water, and then the real banyan tree is on the shore. And what's painted on the water? What word? Anybody remember what that painting looks like? The word is desire. So because Krishna is responding to our desires, he's giving us everything, he's what we desire. Eko bhavuna vyovinadati kaman. Kaman means what is our desire. Where in the Ishopanishads it says, he's the self-sufficient philosopher who's fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. So there are people who think that the way that they're going to be happy is to put themselves in a position of anxiety. Like Prabhupada says to the atheists, they hate the name of God, although they're always in difficulty. And there's one nice lecture Prabhupada gives on the seventh canto, where Prahlad Maharaj is saying to his father, you should go to Vaikuntha, and Prabhupada comments in his lecture that the demons can't understand Vaikuntha, a place without anxiety. Why would I want to go there, they say? Why would I want peace? He says the demons intentionally create anxieties so they can solve them and become heroic. And in meditating on this, I came to the conclusion that most of our suffering in this world, maybe all of our suffering in this world, is our own creation for this very reason, that we don't want peace of mind and actual happiness. We prefer to have anxieties. And if there's no anxieties, we create them. Has your mind ever done that? Have you ever been in a completely peaceful situation and your mind created anxieties that weren't there? Isn't that strange? Don't you think that's strange? We create anxieties. So then this is the question, do we really want peace? In our modern society, people have, it seems to me, that they've tried to eliminate peace from every sphere of life. You know, it used to be when you traveled, you'd go to a train station or airport terminal, and you could just sit and be peaceful waiting for your plane. And now they have to have some screen to put you in anxiety. What is it showing? Some people got killed over here, and there's this, right? You have to try to sit someplace where you can't watch the screen, otherwise you'll be completely in anxiety. And people are now hooked into this all day. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted to see the news, you had to go to a movie theater. You know that? When my parents were little, if you wanted to see the news, you had to go to a movie theater, and you'd get it, 2 weeks late, that it was filmed and sent over the ocean. or it would come in the newspaper. But now people are hooked into this 24 hours a day. I was visiting, one time I went to get some medical treatment in a place where there was no temple. And so I ended up staying in the home of some, what I would call, lapsed devotees. I didn't realize they were lapsed devotees when I arranged to stay with them. But anyway, so they were. And they were playing the television news all day long. That was what was all day, from the minute they woke up until the minute they went to sleep. The news was playing, and it was just repeating. You know, because there's not really new news every hour or every 5 minutes. It was just repeating the same news over and over and over and over and over again. And simply that the couple I was staying with were completely absorbed in anxiety. All day long. This politician's doing this, this thing's happening to the environment, this war is going on, these people are getting kidnapped, and so forth and so on. Right, my daughter-in-law recently sent me an article about how, because she has a lot of little kids, how that in the United States, the government is taking children away from their parents for very minor things. You know, if you let your 10-year-old take your 6-year-old to the park without you, some neighbor may call the police and the police may come to your house and say, you know, you're not taking care of your children. And in this article it was saying, you know, only like 100 children out of every, you know, 700 million get kidnapped by strangers every year. But because this becomes the big news, because whenever it happens, it's on the television and it's all over the internet, and so, then people are just, their anxieties have gotten to this point that they can't function. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I would just ride my bicycle for, you know, miles. So people are increasing their anxiety and increasing their anxiety and increasing their anxiety. They don't actually want peace. Isn't that interesting? And then, of course, they get so many diseases from having all of this increased anxiety. So such people can't be helped, really. If people desire not to be in Vaikuntha, if people desire to be in Kunta, then there's nothing you can do to them. Like Prabhupada said, you cannot wake up a person who's pretending to be asleep. You can wake up an actual sleeping person. So if a person really doesn't want peace and happiness, there's nothing you can do to them. If you say, you know, please have some peace, but I don't want peace. Please come to knowledge, come to enlightenment. I don't want enlightenment. I want ignorance. I want darkness. Then nobody can help them. Therefore, Prabhupada says, there's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says that Krishna helps people to go back to God, or helps people to go to hell if that's what they want. There are people who want to be in a hellish condition, actually desire, as strange as that may seem. There are people who want to be animals. I mean, I was speaking to one couple when I was in Bali, and the wife was kind of coming to Krishna consciousness. She said, I can't accept that a person can take birth as an animal. I think reincarnation always goes up. And I said, but suppose somebody wants to be an animal. So finally she admitted, well, in that case, that would work out. They could be animals. But there are people who want to be animals, actually want to be. I give the example many times at the Woodstock Festival. We were taking the Rath Yatra cart around doing a Harinam, and we came by some people all wearing black, and they were playing something. I suppose you could call it music, but it sounded to me just like animals growling. They were playing it very loud on some speakers, you know. It just sounded like some fight between wolves and bears or something in the middle of the forest. And they're all kind of, you know, dancing to this. So they want to be animals. Many of them are even, you know, modifying their bodies to look like animals. Did you know that they do this sort of thing? They dye their hair to look like leopard skin, and they do piercings and stuff so they look like they have fangs and, you know. So there are people, they want to be animals. And if you go to these people and you say, you know, the real purpose of human life is, they don't want to be a human being. If we were to preach to them, why do just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending like the animals? This is one of our main preaching points, correct? Don't be just like the animals. Be human. Their answer is, I don't want to be human. I remember seeing a billboard many, many years ago in New York for blue jeans, and it showed this girl wearing blue jeans crouching at a river to drink like an animal. And next to her was like a tiger, you know. Wear these blue jeans and bring out your animal side. I forget exactly what it said. So for such people, Krishna is leaving them alone. And the Bhagavatam can't be given to such people. So for such people, we are told that we should not preach to them. You know, the Majjhima devotee has the four kinds of people they relate to. They try to love God, they make friends with the devotees, they avoid the demons, right? And they preach to the innocent. And normally we might think of the innocent as being in these four good guys category, and the demons as being in the four bad guys category. But here Srila Prabhupada is saying the innocent may be in the four bad guys category too. As long as they sincerely want their own welfare and peace of mind, then they are a candidate. That's the criteria. The criteria is not if you put them in the good guys or the bad guys. In fact, sometimes people in the good guys categories are harder to preach to. Have you ever experienced that? You know, just like Maharaj was talking about his mother, I'm sure he's been trying to teach her about Krishna consciousness for 4 decades, and it hasn't really worked. Because although she's intuitively praying to the Lord when she's in difficulty or she wants something, she obviously doesn't really want her own welfare or peace of mind. She wants to enjoy the world. Do you follow? And so this is really the dividing criteria. What do you want? I mean, let's think of how the Bhagavatam will benefit each of these. So when they are in difficulty, how does hearing the glories of the Lord bring us, we have this word here, nirvana? Sankleshan nirvana. Kleshan means suffering. Klesha agni bhakti destroys. Klesha brings nirvana, peace. So for someone who's in difficulty, we need all of the kinds of difficulty one can have, right? Disease, old age, war, family trouble, right? Divorce, mental illness, bad governments. What are all the kinds of difficulties people can have? So many kinds of difficulties. Job you don't like, and unemployed, not married when you want to be married, the whole list of difficulties. So how would hearing the glories of the Lord give one peace from these difficulties? Anybody have any thoughts? Relief. But how? What's the mechanism? Why is it that when you hear the glories of the Lord, yes? Oh, that's so sweet. So when you hear the glories of the Lord, you feel this connection like a little baby feels with its mother. You know, any of you who are parents, so or any of you ever taking care of children, there's an incredible, that is just an incredible feeling. When you take this little tiny infant and you're like holding it and they fall asleep on your chest and you're kind of rocking them, and it's just such a sweet, sweet feeling. And so that feeling of the, I mean, that's from the parental perspective, but from the little baby, I don't think most of us remember when we were 2 or 3 months old, but maybe we can remember even when we were 2 or 3, and, you know, we fell asleep in the back of the car, and our daddy kind of put us on his shoulder and carried us into the house, right? Do you ever feel like you wish somebody could do that again? I sometimes do, especially if I'm really sick or something. It's like, where's my mommy or daddy to carry me to bed? So that feeling of just being completely sheltered. You know, just sheltered. I'm just going to fall asleep in the back of the car. Wherever my parents take me, it's okay. You know, and you wake up in a hotel room or something, you don't even know how you got there. It's just okay. They're going to take care of you. Right? So this is the glories of the Lord gives us that. That's beautiful. How else does the glories of the Lord give relief from material suffering? Yes?
By the fact that the material manifestation is not independent from Krishna. Mm. So when we chant his glories, then our consciousness becomes spiritual because even though we're immaterial bodies, consciousness is the real designator.
So our consciousness becomes spiritual. And how does our consciousness becoming spiritual relieve us of difficulty? When our consciousness becomes spiritual, how does that make the difficulties go away for us? Yes.
It makes us realize that they're temporary.
You realize that they're temporary, and you realize that they're not happening to you. Any other? Yes?
Well, because neither the soul is spiritual nor material.
So, therefore?
So, like, giving out material is spiritual knowledge. This is not a thought, this is not a soul.
Okay, so you get spiritual knowledge. So, this would mean knowledge of that the world is temporary, that I'm not this body. It's not really happening to me. It's kind of like someone waking you up and saying you're just dreaming, right? Or, you know, when I was about 6 years old and some friends of mine showed me a scary movie and my parents saved me and said, it's just a movie, it's not real. You know? Also, I think seeing that the connection with Krishna, seeing that everything's being arranged by Krishna, this is a real source of solace for religious people in general. That there is a controller behind everything. That things aren't just random. Because a lot of our suffering is due to not knowing the meaning behind our suffering. We're willing to undergo a lot of suffering and even take it as pleasure if it has some meaning. You know, I think all of us will do very difficult and even painful things for a higher cause. And we'll see that as pleasurable even. But the problem with suffering is when you see it doesn't have any purpose. It doesn't have any meaning. And when you understand God behind it, it gives it some meaning. Okay, what about in need of money? And again, we really need to expand this. So in need or in want, perhaps, of material things. So how does hearing the glories of the Lord help with this one? Oh, I like this. You become detached. This was explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that there was this brahmana who was very poor and wanted money, and he got the Gopal Mantra, and by chanting the Gopal Mantra, he gave up his desire for money. So, by the way, most people don't think of that as the solution. So when they come, this also relates to what Maharaj was talking about yesterday, that when you give people a solution and say, chant Hare Krishna, read the books, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But devotees, even devotees in the Hare Krishna movement, when they have some problem that they want to be solved, the first one is you want to get rid of something, and the second one is you want to get something. So getting in difficulty, you want to get rid of the difficulty, and in need of money, you want to acquire something. So even when devotees come that I want to get rid of something or I want to acquire something, and you say to them, if you become Krishna conscious, it won't matter to you anymore. That often isn't satisfying. That's not what they want. They want the externals to change. So if you say to them, you know, if you chant Hare Krishna, the fact that you're sick won't matter anymore, or the fact that you're poor won't matter anymore, you won't care anymore, it won't be misery to you anymore. You know, it's somehow that often doesn't compute to people, is that that's really going to be a solution. But that is one of the ways in which it's a solution, that you no longer perceive it as a misery. Or you no longer perceive it as a need. You change your perception of the situation. So you may still be in need of money, you may still be poor, but you no longer perceive your poverty as some kind of problem that has to be solved. And I was speaking to a devotee like this actually quite recently. So it's somebody who really, they don't really have very much money. It's always a problem. It's just been a constant problem. And I was saying to this devotee, oh, you know, there's maybe this opportunity for you. I heard about this opportunity, something you could do to make some money. And the devotee says, I'm not going to endeavor for money. That was very interesting. So I'm not going to endeavor for money. I'm just going to serve Krishna. However he wants to maintain me, if he wants to keep me in poverty, that's his business. So devotees do really come to that platform. Of course, Sudama Brahmana was on that platform. He just didn't care. It didn't matter to him. Whether I'm poor or rich, whether I'm this or that, or whether I'm the other. So how else does hearing the glories of the Lord alleviate our need, or Prabhupada uses the word need, for material things? Yes?
I kind of touched on it, but like we understand that we use that Krishna gives us our quota for what we need, and so we just start to realize that I've just got what I need, and Krishna's giving me just enough.
Oh, I really like that. That we realize that I do have my quota, and I actually do have what I need. Yes? So the beginning person knows whatever I need, I'm not the supreme controller, yes?
Yeah, it's not because I feel like I have an exertion.
So my exertion and my determination is not sufficient, and therefore I also have to go to the controller. No matter how hard I work, I also have to go to the controller for what I need. Which is definitely a step up from people who aren't going to the controller. Okay, and someone who's advanced in knowledge, again, this is not talking about theoretical knowledge, this is not talking about being able to list the Sanskrit names of all the Lord's incarnations, nor is it certainly not talking about how to fly a plane, or how to drive a car, or how to raise your children, or how to spell words in English. It's not talking about that kind of knowledge. The examples of these of people in knowledge are like the four Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami. So those are the examples given of this kind of person. This is somebody who's already in Brahman. They already realize that they're a soul. They've already realized Brahman. So we meet some people. This is unusual, but we meet some people like this who come to Krishna consciousness in our Hare Krishna movement, people who were already Brahman realized, usually through some other system of yoga. So how can hearing the glories of the Lord benefit these people? Yes. They get bhakti, okay, and how does that benefit them?
They get to understand spiritual activities, because before then they can't understand spiritual activities.
Yes, okay, then they can go higher to spiritual activities. And this is the group of the good guys that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is like his very self. He said these people who are already Brahman realized and come in bhakti to him from that platform. He said, although all of these people are magnanimous souls, these people, he says, are like my very self. Now, again, sometimes we might think, well, these are the most qualified of the good guys. But I've experienced that sometimes these are the hardest people to give bhakti to. Because, again, if they're not really wanting their own welfare and peace of mind, then they're not open. Or if they think they already have peace of mind, well, I have Brahman, that's enough. Right? It's just, I've had this experience over and over again, that if when you go to some of these yoga centers or you go to some of these like New Age thingies, like in Hawaii, I sometimes give classes at the New Thought Church. And they're all really, you know, the people there are really into sattva-gun. And some of them are, just a few of them there are the real deal, and they're actually Brahman realized, but pretty much everyone there is really into sattva-gun. But they have the downside of sattva-gun that they think, I'm already happy and peaceful. You know, we could compare sattva-gun to being inside of a glass house. Everything is clear, but you're not outside. But because they sort of think that they're outside, just like the bug who keeps trying to get out the glass window. Have you ever been in a room like that? Where you open the door and the bug keeps staying at the glass? You open the window and the bug keeps staying at the glass portion of the window, and you try to move the bug. When I was just in Wellington, I don't know, we were somewhere by the fly capital of New Zealand, and there were so many flies in my room, and they don't have screens. I don't know what it is in New Zealand, people don't put screens in their windows or something. I never understood that about, the only thing about New Zealand I don't understand. There's screens you can put in your windows. Anyway, there's no screens in the windows. And there are all these flies. So I'm opening the window and I'm trying to move the fly. I'm using a cloth, I'm using my hand, I'm putting incense smoke there so they'll think that there's a fire and they have to run around. I'm trying everything that I could. And there were these flies that they just stayed by the glass. You know, looks like outside to me, they were saying. Why is she trying to move me someplace else? So sometimes those people get stuck like that. And then the last category, those who are inquisitive, so the curious people. These are just people. What's going on? What's the world all about? know, is there God? Who is he? What am I? Why are we suffering? People asking questions. So how does the glories of the Lord help them? It's pretty simple. It answers their questions. And I think that all of us have experienced that this Krishna conscious philosophy is the only philosophy that answers all of our questions. That's why I believe one of the big reasons why most of us come to Krishna consciousness and stay in Krishna consciousness. Vrindavananda Maharaj brings out the point that one way that we understand a philosophy is true is that it logically makes sense as a cohesive whole. I mean, we have to say, frankly, that most of the religions and philosophies that are being taught on the earth today don't make a lot of sense. They're just not even reasonable. If you say the reason we're all suffering is that Adam and Eve made a mistake, you know, whether they literally or symbolically ate a fruit, and therefore I break my leg. You know, that's not reasonable. 5,600 years ago, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and grandmother disobeyed God, and because of that, my leg gets broken. Huh? That's not very fair. That's not a very reasonable universe. And okay, you have one shot at life, just one. And your life might only last for 5 minutes. You might be born, cry, and die. Hey, it happens. Right? Or you may be born in some terrible circumstance. Your parents may be atheists. You may be born in the middle of a war zone where you're starving from birth. You know, you see these photos of these little starving babies that are just, you know. But that's it, just this life, you know. Maybe one person is born as a minister's child with all facility and a high IQ and connections with values, right? And another person is born to atheist families in the middle of a war and famine and poverty, and they only live till they're three. But that's it. Everybody has one life. And at the end of this life, you're going to go to heaven, or you're going to go to hell forever. Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And hell's really nasty, and you'll be burning in a lake of fire without dying for the rest of eternity. Is that a logical, reasonable answer to what is the problems of life? And what is the meaning of the universe? Is that intellectually satisfying? I don't think so. You know, or philosophies that there was nothing and then there was a chunk and the chunk exploded. I've never seen nothing produce something. And, you know, you don't see things explode and create order. It just doesn't happen. You know, if you forget to put the top on your blender and you put hot liquid in it and turn it on, it doesn't create a prep in your kitchen. It just doesn't ever happen to me. I mean, that would be kind of cool, you know. Put hot liquid in your blender and leave the top off and press the button and cheesecake, you know. So these are not satisfying philosophies. So the Bhagavatam gives you a satisfying philosophy. Right? Wherever you look, everything connects. It makes sense, and it satisfies one's curiosity. Not only does it satisfy one's curiosity, but it gives you a way to live. It gives you a practical way to live. All right, then we have the four bad guys. So how is the Bhagavatam going to help those? So the first people are those in the mode of passion. They're addicted to the mode of progressive fruit of work. And they're subject to the accompanying miseries. Because mode of passion means you work hard for some fruit. So your fruit is a little tasty and your work is miserable. This is a mode of passion. You do miserable work to get a little fruit that might be tasty. It sometimes is tasty. And then you do more work that's miserable to again try to get a little fruit that might be tasty. And this is the mode of passion. Work, 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 fruit. Work, 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 fruit. Work, 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 work. Fruit. And the fruit might not be there. You might work very hard and you get to the fruit and somebody else got it first. You know? Happens all the time. Somebody invents something and somebody else gets the patent for it, and the other person who gets the patent gets all the money, and the person who invented it gets nothing. You've all heard of that kind of thing, right? It probably talks about the mouse that digs the hole and the snake eats the mouse and lives in the hole. You do the work, I benefit. And so this is this often happens to people in the mode of passion. They work hard, some thief comes and steals it. Or you get the fruit and it wasn't what you expected it to be. You know, you marry the person of your dreams and find out they're the person of your nightmares. You know, hey, that happens. Fruit doesn't work out properly. So how will the Bhagavad Gita help these people? Gives them a better goal. Yes, these are very goal-oriented, very fruitive-oriented people. So it gives them a much better goal. Instead of working for the temporary things of this world, work for something that's eternal. Work for something that's really going to satisfy you. Excellent. Okay, and then the people in the mode of ignorance, addicted to vicious work for sense gratification, and so suffer the consequence. So these people have just misery, at least the people in the mode of passion, they get a little bit of a tasty fruit now and then, because they're following the codes of the Vedas. But the people in ignorance, they have only misery, because their means of getting their fruit is also sinful. Also, basically, people in mode of ignorance, they're not willing to work. People in mode of ignorance say, why should I work for a fruit? Just take a fruit right now. That's the philosophy in the mode of ignorance. So just let somebody, you know, they're like a snake. Let somebody else work for the fruit and I'll steal it. Let me just take things. Why should I grow food with so much trouble? You know, just pour chemicals on the land and just get the food quickly. Or just kill an animal and get the food like that. And why should I even take care of the animal? Who cares? I'm going to kill them anyway. You know, just fatten them up with chemicals and antibiotics so that I can kill them after 10 days instead of after 30 days. Very much mode of ignorance. Thinking, you know, why should I get married and take care of a spouse? Just have some immediate sexual relations with somebody and then abandon them. And if there's a baby, kill the baby. And if they get some disease, just take some antibiotics. This is very much the mood in the mode of ignorance. So how will hearing the glories of the Bhagavad Gita help these people? Yeah.
It makes them realize their actions are going to lead them to a very horrible situation.
And this is, of course, what Narada Muni did with Madhurari the hunter, where he said to him, do you have any idea what you're doing? I mean, at least in the mode of passion, you're going to take birth as a human being, because you're following the laws. But in the mode of ignorance, you don't know where you're going to go. You really are going to become an animal and go to the lower planets or go to these temporary hells. I mean, it's not very nice. So it gives them knowledge that, wait a minute, this is, you're really going in the wrong direction. You're really in trouble. Any other way that the Bhagavad Gita glories can help those in the ignorance?
The Bhagavad Gita is Krishna, so you need Krishna's mercy and relationship with
Prabhupada. Oh, very nice. They get a relationship with Prabhupada and Krishna's mercy. I was also thinking that a lot of the stories in the Bhagavad Gita are going to be attractive to those in the mode of ignorance. Did you ever think about that? There's a lot of, like, ghastly pastimes. Nisingadeva. Well, Prabhupada specifically said if you want to enjoy the ghastly rasa, you meditate on Nisingadeva. And we've seen practically that there is a lot of mode of ignorance people who get very attracted to Nisingadeva. Have we seen this? We see a lot of the people who are into, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, they like Nisingadeva. They think he's really, wow, look at this god wearing an intestinal garland and splattered with blood, and they really enjoy it. So there's actually something there, or what to speak of, Parasuram. I was talking with one young devotee, young in years, not young as a devotee, who was really likes Parasuram, who I've never been that particularly attracted to. And he was just talking about, yeah, I get this picture of this mountain of skulls, and there's Parasuram with his axe creating rivers of blood. And some of the great battle scenes, right? There's something there to attract even those people and bring them to some higher rasa. I mean, it's good to know this because, why are we talking about this? Because, first of all, maybe we're in one of these eight categories. But even if we're not in any of these eight categories, even if we're fully transcendental, we certainly preach to people in these eight categories. And we want to be able to present Krishna consciousness to people. If somebody doesn't even want peace of mind and their own happiness, then you just ignore them. But even if they're in these eight categories, if they want peace of mind and their own happiness, we have something for them. All right, and now The people who have great knowledge maybe are somewhat in sattva-guna, but they're not seeing the Lord. Maybe they're even reading the Vedas, they're reciting Sanskrit, but they're not seeing the Lord. They don't acknowledge the authority of the Lord. They're interpreting the scriptures in such a way to deny the Lord. These are very difficult people to preach to because they think they already know. They think they already have religion. They already have spirituality. So this is probably one of the most... I personally find these people more difficult than the atheists to preach to. So how does the Bhagavatam satisfy these kind of people? Oh, wonderful. Because these kind of people like that. That's their sense gratification. Everyone has a different kind of sense gratification. Just like Prabhupada says, the pig likes, you know, sewage and we like halva. He says you put halva in front of a pig, they won't eat it. I'm sure Prabhupada had practical experience of that. I'm sure he wasn't just speaking theoretically. Yes.
When they're getting the Bhagavatam from us, they're getting Sri Guru Prabhupada, which is what they're missing. The reason they have sophisticated knowledge but can't see Krishna is because they're not coming to it through Sri Guru Prabhupada.
This is beautiful. So the reason they're speculating is that they don't have access to someone to explain it properly. I'm sure we all experience it. Once we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we understood other philosophies better. Did you have that experience? All of a sudden, other religions and other philosophies made sense to you. And as soon as you put on this way, this glasses kind of the Shastra Chakshus, oh, that's what it means in the Bible. Oh, that's what this philosopher is trying to say. Oh, that's what they're trying to say. Marge was talking about this yesterday, the psychologists who talk about, I forget what he called it again, the hedonistic, what did he call it? Treadmill? Hedonistic treadmill. And we can understand what that is better than they can understand what it is. So when they come in touch with the Bhagavatam and the Parampara, all of a sudden it gives them exactly what they're looking for. Because they're also really looking for knowledge. And it gives them that way of understanding things. Also, it's very intellectually stimulating. Krishna conscious philosophy is very intellectually stimulating, just like prasadam is very tongue and belly stimulating, right? I mean, what we have in our Krishna consciousness movement, it also satisfies us materially. We have to be, frank that it does that. And our philosophy is very intellectually satisfying. So if somebody's getting their sense pleasure like that, then this can help them with that. Yes? Okay, well, I have just one more bad guy and then we'll be done. Just let me finish my last bad guy. So our last bad guy are the atheists. Do you come in every day during the week?
Mondays and Fridays.
Mondays and Fridays, okay. So then we'll just finish my last bad guy, if that's all right. So the atheists, how does the Bhagavatam give benefit to the atheists? The out-and-out atheists, those who are purposely hating the very name of God.
There's heaps of amazing atheists in the Bhagavatam.
Woo! I never thought of that. There's heaps of amazing atheists in the Bhagavatam. What a way to trick the atheists. You can use this out next time you're on book distribution and you meet a full-on flaming atheist. You can say, you know what? In this book, we have one of the most amazing atheistic philosophers that was ever on the planet.
He fights God
one-on-one. Yeah, he even fights God one-on-one. He's speaking incredible philosophy. Look at some of these verses he's speaking. Just think of that. Just imagine. So this Bhagavatam benefits anybody who wants peace, good guy, bad guy. No matter who we are, no matter... whether we're a good guy or a bad guy or some mixture of those, and no matter who's anyone in the world, the Bhagavatam will solve all of the problems. Thank you very much, and Prabhupada ki jai.